The Gospel of John, chapter 12. I want to pick up our reading at verse 20. Again, I'll be reading from the New King James Version. It was down to about verse 30, 31, or 32. We read through those last verses of our study last Lord's Day morning. So we want to pick up in that particular immediate context with the exposition of our lesson this morning. But I want to pick up the overall context, which begins back in chapter 20 of our immediate context. John 12 and verse 20, now there were certain Greeks or Gentiles, that is Gentile proselytes or those under consideration. There were certain Greeks among those who came up to worship at the feast. Of course, the feast in the context is the feast of Passover. Jesus has entered into the city of Jerusalem earlier in this chapter, and he has been hailed as King of Israel back in chapter 12 and in verse 13. So the people on this occasion have recognized him as the long-awaited Messiah who is to come, that is, the king who is going to rule and reign over the physical nation of Israel. They thought, they misunderstood, of course, that he was going to establish a spiritual kingdom. So on this occasion, there's Gentiles who come to this feast of Passover. Remember, he will be crucified during this particular period of time as our sacrifice for sin, as the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. And so Gentiles on this occasion have come to Jesus. Kind of seems to be an appropriate time for them to come, since he also died for all men, and we'll see that in the context. Verse 21, then they came to Philip, who was from Bethsaida of Galilee, and asked him, saying, Sir, we wish to see Jesus. Philip came and told Andrew, and in turn Andrew and Philip told Jesus. But Jesus answered them, saying, The hour has come that the Son of Man should be glorified. Jesus said to them, Now, I want to remind you that the them under consideration, of course, to us in the English translation that we're reading, the nearest antecedent would be back to Andrew and Philip. Doesn't seem as though in the context Jesus is addressing these Greeks or Gentiles that come to him. Remember, they wanted to see him. Means more than just look upon him visibly. They wanted to meet him. They wanted to converse with him. They wanted to talk with him. So Andrew and Philip, having come, told Jesus that. It seems as though the context indicates that, well, he doesn't address them at all. It seems as though he just doesn't mention it at all, as if they're not important. Well, I want you to remember that we said that them is indefinite in the Greek. It could refer back to those Greeks, those Gentiles as well. And we see later on in the context in verse 29, therefore the people who stood by, so there were also others there on that occasion. And so the them includes people we don't know, people from the crowd and perhaps those Gentiles. I want to suggest to you, I believe the Gentiles are included in these remarks, and we'll see that in our study this morning more clearly. So verse 24 of John 12, most assuredly I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the ground and dies, it remains alone, but if it dies, it produces much grain. Now, of course, Jesus is using this illustration in regard to himself. He must die in order to produce much fruit, in order to bring about great spiritual result from his death. He's the one who must die. But he also mentions that those who follow him must be willing to sacrifice their life and to give their life as well. Verse 25, he who loves his life will lose it, and he who hates his life in this world will keep it for eternal life. If anyone serves me, let him follow me, and where I am, there my servant will be also. If anyone serves me, him my Father will honor. Now my soul is troubled, and what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. But for this purpose I came to this hour. Father, glorify your name. Then a voice came from heaven saying, I have both glorified it and will glorify it again. Therefore the people who stood by and heard it said that it had thundered. Others said, an angel has spoken to him. Jesus answered and said, this voice did not come because of me, but for your sake. Now, I think we read through verse 22, or studied through verse 22 last Lord's Day morning, but let's just pick up here with this statement, because we kind of went hastily through the last two or three verses last Lord's Day morning for the sake of time, but I want to pick up at verse 30 and move on, because there's so much in these verses. Jesus answered and said, "This voice did not come because of me, but for your sakes." Now, if you remember here in John 12 and verse 29, when this voice spoke from heaven, evidently the implication is, in the context, it was God. It was God who was speaking. But of course, evidently the people heard the voice, but did not understand it. Remember the word people there, verse 29. We saw it translated earlier, a great many, back in chapter 12 and verse 9. Back in chapter 12 and verse 12 is a great multitude. So the people under consideration, it's a great number of people. There are many people in the city of Jerusalem at this time for the Feast of Passover. And evidently it's a large crowd who is under consideration. So they heard this voice speak from heaven. But evidently they heard it but did not understand it. They didn't understand what was said. Well, it was not said what the response that was given from heaven was, the response given to Jesus, not to the people. And note the word voice. Jesus answered and said, "This voice did not come," because they didn't understand it. The word voice there could easily have been translated sound. "This sound did not come because of me, but for your sake." So they heard a sound from heaven. They didn't know what it said. Some of them thought it was thunder. Some of them thought it was an angel speaking from heaven. But of course it spoke in response to Jesus. And so he said, "This voice did not come because of me, but for your sake." Now is the judgment of this world. Now the ruler of this world will be cast out. Now is the judgment of this world, because John 3:16 and following tells us that all men stand condemned lest they believe in Jesus Christ as the Son of God. And so the world stands under condemnation. So the judgment of the world has come. It's come to the time that Jesus is to be crucified for the sins of the world. And now the ruler of this world, a clear indication that Satan is under consideration, he's cast out. Well, he's ruling, but he's going to be cast out of office. He's the leader, he's the ruler, he's the prince, he's the one in charge. But he's going to be thrown out of office, and someone else is going to take the position of prince or ruler. We'll see that in the context. Who is that that's going to cast him out and then take the position of prince or ruler? It's Jesus Christ. As he's exalted on the cross, elevated on the cross, lifted up on the cross, he'll also be exalted to the right hand of God. So he becomes the ruler, he becomes the prince. So now is the judgment of this world. So we have to see that the judgment of this world and the casting out of Satan as the ruler of this world, or the prince of this world, takes place at the crucifixion of Christ. Up to that period of time, you might say Satan, so to speak, had free reign. Of course, God could control him anytime he wanted to. But he had free reign with the lives of men. But after the crucifixion of Christ and his ascension to the Father's right hand, Satan presents no power over man to bring about his spiritual death. Because Christ, though Satan might bring about man's spiritual death, Christ can make him spiritually alive. Overrules Satan, overthrows Satan in that sense. Verse 31, now is the judgment of this world. Now the ruler of this world will be cast out. Note this in verse 32 of John 12. And I, if I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all people to myself. And I, if, now that little word if goes back in the context to what he had mentioned about his death previous, back in verse 24. Most assuredly, I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the ground and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it produces much grain. It produces great results, spiritual result. Much fruit, it produced many souls unto salvation. And so here, and if I am lifted up, talking about his death, as he had mentioned back in verse 24, as being a seed that would be planted in the ground.
That's a bad translation, that word,
if. Yeah. When I am lifted up. Could be either one, but if gives the idea, condition. If, of course, it be when he is lifted up. Good point. And if I am lifted up from the earth, I'll draw people to myself. If I am lifted up. Jesus had mentioned this before back in chapter 3 and in verse 14. Chapter 8 and in verse 24. If I am lifted up like the serpent on the pole was lifted up in the wilderness. So of course this has reference, as we see in the very next verse, has reference to his death, being lifted up from the earth, as being elevated from the earth. Lifted up on a cross is the idea. But there's other things in this as well. The lifting up here, the same word is translated exalted, in reference to Jesus being exalted to the right hand of God. So his crucifixion brought about a lot. His death on the cross, of course, cast Satan out from being the ruler of the world. It indicated that the judgment of the world had come. But with his death, he is also going to be exalted to the right hand of God. When he's exalted to the right hand of God, what happens? He becomes king. He becomes the one whom they have cried him out to be, King of Israel in verse 13 of chapter 12. But he's not going to be king of a physical kingdom, but going to be king of a spiritual kingdom. He's going to be the ruler, not Satan. And if I am, or when I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all people to myself. Now, earlier we saw a similar phrase to that. All will be drawn by the teaching of the Word, of course. That's how he draws people to himself. Just as God draws people through the teaching of the Word, that's how Christ will draw all people to himself. Verse 33 of John 12, this he said, signifying by what death he would die. Signifying, there's that word signifying or sign we see in the book of Revelation. So it's a symbolic representation of him being crucified, being lifted up. This he said, signifying by what death he would die. Verse 34, now note, the people answered him. There's that phrase, the people. We've seen that phrase over and over again. Last time we saw it was back in verse 29. But remember, we said it is also a great many in verse 9, a great multitude in verse 12. So that's who's under consideration. Not the same particular groups, but there is a multitude. There's a crowd. There's not just a few or a handful of people on this occasion. And we're going to see in verse 34 and following that evidently, perhaps these Gentiles that had come seeking to have a conversation with Jesus, perhaps they're under consideration, as I failed to mention here in verse 32. And I, if or when I am lifted up from the earth, note this, will draw all people to myself, including the Gentiles that had come seeking to see him or converse with him, talk with him. This is one of the reasons I say that perhaps the Gentiles are included in this crowd. Now remember, we had said before, Jesus was somewhere in the courts of the temple when the Gentiles come seeking to converse with him, and they came seeking to see or converse with him because he wasn't present there where the Gentiles were. The Gentiles were in the court of the Gentiles. They couldn't perceive beyond that place. So Jesus either had to come out to the court of the Gentiles or meet them in some location because the Gentiles couldn't go to him. That's why they asked to see him. They asked to converse with him. And so when he says that I will draw all people to myself, I believe he includes those Gentiles. He's perhaps telling the Gentiles on this occasion, your belief in me is also included in this message that I have, that you too will be saved. Verse 30, 34 now. John 12, verse 34. The people answered him. Now, who the people are who ask on this occasion, again, we do not know, but I believe the context seems to indicate perhaps it may have been the Gentiles who may have asked this question. We have heard from the law that the Christ, that is the long-awaited Messiah, that is the Messiah who is to be King of Israel, we have heard from the law that the Christ remains forever. And how can you say the Son of Man must be lifted up? Who is this Son of Man? Of course, Jesus had taken this title for himself, Son of Man, Daniel 7 and verse 13, as a title of him being the Messiah, the long-awaited King who was to come. But the phrase Son of Man, just in and of itself, just means a man. That's all it means. But, of course, Jesus uses it in reference to himself being deity, the Son of God, the long-awaited Messiah, the Christ, the anointed one of God who would take away the sins of the world. So we have heard from the law that Christ remains forever. Now, they had heard, perhaps, such passages as Psalm 89 and verse 36. We'll not go and read that, but David's descendants would rule and reign on his throne forever. So when the Messiah comes, of course, he would be of the seed or a descendant of David, and his reign would continue forever. Not that he would, they misunderstood, not that he would live forever, but that his descendants would rule and reign on his throne forever, that the kingdom would never end. That was their perception of a physical kingdom to come. And so we have heard from the law that the Christ remains forever. How can you say the Son of Man must be lifted up? Now, the Jews understood on this occasion what lifted up means. It means to be crucified. They understood what it meant. But they can't make sense of this. Well, you say you're the Messiah. You say that you're the Son of Man, the one who's going to rule and reign on David's throne forever. But how could you be him if you're going to be lifted up, if you're going to be crucified and put to death? They can't understand how that could take place. Well, later on, of course, we learn in the New Testament, some thought that was foolish. Some thought that was ridiculous for a king to come and then say that he's going to save all men, but yet he could not save himself. So on this occasion, they think, well, you know, how do we match these two things up? You say you're the Son of Man, and they understood that to be the long-awaited Messiah who is to come. You say you're the Messiah who is to come, but we don't understand this being lifted up. If you're the Messiah who is to come and who is to reign forever, remain forever, then how is it you're going to be crucified? So they ask, who is this Son of Man? Who is this man then you're talking about? It must be someone else. No, Jesus is speaking about himself. But again, they could not match those two things up. The Messiah, according to old law, was going to reign forever. But he claims to be the Messiah, but he says he's going to be put to death. He's going to be lifted up on the cross. Well, Jesus doesn't actually, you might say in the following verses, speak about that particular subject they brought up and doesn't answer the correct question directly. But he says in verse 35, then Jesus said to them, and note the them under consideration, of course, is the people, the ones who've asked this question, and specifically the ones who've asked. We do not know. They could have been Jews. They could have been Gentiles. Then Jesus said to them, a little while longer the light is with you. Walk while you have the light, lest darkness overtake you. He who walks in darkness does not know where he is going. So Jesus comes back to basically belief in him as the Son of Man, as the long-awaited Messiah, as the Son of God. A little while longer the light is with you. For those of you who are studying the book of Revelation with us, know that phrase, a little while longer. Remember Revelation 6 and verse 11? After the opening of the fifth seal on that scroll that the Lord took from the hand of God, he opened the fifth seal and underneath the altar there were souls crying out. They were crying out for judgment, for vengeance to be carried out upon those who had brought them to that condition. And what did the Lord tell them? Wait a little while longer. That's a time reference. Now, of course, some people see in Revelation 6 and in verse 11, a little while longer as being the end of the world. Well, is a little while longer the end of the world here? No, we know what a little while longer means. A little while.
That's divine time. That's Jesus' time, not ours.
Well, that's a good argument, I guess. But God didn't reveal His Word to deity. God revealed His Word to man. And man has to understand the words that are given to man. He has to comprehend them in terms that man would comprehend them. Because we simply cannot comprehend the mind of God in reference to how He considers time. If you knew what a little time was to God, what would it be? We don't know.
2 Peter 3:8. Mm-hmm. But, beloved, do not forget this one thing, that with the Lord one day is as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is one day. In other words, time means nothing to God.
Time means nothing to Him. So, but time does mean something to us. And when He says a little while, we're not talking about a few hundred years, a few thousand years, or a billion years. We're talking about a little time. That's my whole point that I want to make here. We understand a little time in this context, but when it comes to the book of Revelation, oh, we can't understand that. We can. Because it was written to the mind of men. It was written so we could understand it. And so I want to say that we can understand it in Revelation. Okay, back to John 35 here. Got off track a little bit. But a little while longer, the light is with you. What does He mean, the light is with you? Well, remember back in chapter 8 and verse 12, He said, I am the light of the world. And He made that statement again in John 9 and in verse 5. So He is the light of the world. He's the one under consideration. A little while longer, the light is with you. So the light in the immediate context would be the Son of Man mentioned in the previous verse. You say the Son of Man must be lifted up. So the light and the Son of Man are the same. Jesus and the light are the same. So a little while longer, you have the light, and the light is with you. A little while longer here is, well, He's going to be crucified during this feast of Passover. Then after His resurrection, He's going to spend 40 days still with His disciples. So we see what a little while is, don't we? In the context of the crucifixion of Christ under consideration. So a little while longer, the light is with you. So a little while longer, I'm with you. I'll be with you for a short period of time. Walk while you have the light. Walk, live, behave, conduct yourself while you have the light. Now, you work during the daytime. Of course, things have changed because of all the modern day inventions, but during this particular period of time, for the most part, people worked in the daytime. Why? So they could see. So they could see the light shining. They can see in the daytime. So walk while you have the light. Conduct yourself. Behave yourself while you have the light, because that's when you work. That's when you carry out your actions and deeds. Note the latter portion of the verse. Latter portion of the verse. He who walks in darkness does not know where he's going. You know, if you tried to work at nighttime during this particular period of time, you couldn't see your way around. Same thing is true today if you're trying to walk literally through a house with no lights on. Those who walk do not know where they're going. They don't know where they're going because what do? You stumble and fall over something. You walk into a ditch. You walk into a pit if you're outside. So those who walk in darkness do not know where they're going. But Jesus, of course, is making a spiritual application to this, to Himself as being the light of the world. I am the light. I'm the one who came to illuminate the minds of men. and to bring the light of life to men. It goes all the way back to John chapter 1. Remember, he was the light, and the light provides the light of life to men. A little while longer, the light is with you. Walk while you have the light. Walk while I'm here. Conduct yourself and behave yourself while I'm here in the way that you can see. Lest, he says, lest the darkness overtakes you, seizes you, seizes control of you, lest the darkness overtakes you. Now, how might darkness overtake you? Well, you know, you work during the day, during this particular period of time in history, you worked during the day, and as the sun was going down, you made your way home because you didn't wait till it got dark because you couldn't see your way to get there. Lest darkness overtake you, take control of you. But here I want to suggest that the ideal of darkness overtaking them is not physical darkness, of course, it's spiritual darkness. Walk while you have me as your spiritual light. I will illuminate your way. I can tell you through my teaching, through my word. I can direct your path. Walk while you have me, lest the darkness, lest spiritual ignorance overtake you. Lest spiritual darkness overtakes you. Lest sin overtakes you. Takes control of you. He who walks in darkness does not know where he's going. The one who is in spiritual ignorance, the one who is in sin, doesn't know where he's going, because his spiritual perception is darkened by his sin. And so Jesus, I believe, includes the Gentiles in this as he seeks to cause them to believe in him. Remember the question that was asked in verse 34 doesn't seem to be answered. But it is answered. It's answered in an indirect way. Remember, they're asking, who is this man? Who is this Son of Man you're talking about? Well, I'm him. All you got to do is believe in me. That's the point that he's making here. Verse 36, John 12. While you have the light, note what he said. Believe in the light. Now, he is the light, so believe in the light. You might not fully comprehend and understand the use of the title that I've been using, Son of Man. And you might not fully understand and comprehend how it is I can be the Messiah, the long-awaited, anointed of God, the King of Israel who was to come, and yet die on the cross and reign forever. You might not understand it, but just believe it. Believe it by believing in me. While you have the light, believe in the light. Another way of saying believe in me. Or believe in the revelation that I'm giving, because light is a revelation. It's an illumination of the mind of man from the mind of God. So while you have the light, believe in the light, that or so that or in order that you may become, note this, so that or in order that you might become the sons of light. They're not sons of light yet. But if they believe in him, they can become sons of light. So John 12 and verse 36 again, important. While you have the light, believe in the light, that, so that, or in order that you might become sons of light. Now note that phrase, sons of light. Sons of light. Now how do we become sons of light? Well, you got to believe in him, that's for certain. But there's more, we understand that. Become sons of light is to become sons of God. Become children of God. But it doesn't say become sons of God or children of God. It says become sons of light. When you see a phrase son of, think of characteristics in your mind. You take upon yourself the characteristic. If you're the son of someone, it's usually because you're connected to someone. And you have some association, characteristics in common with the one you're associated with. That's the ideal of son of. If you're a son of God, then you have the characteristics of God. You know, you love, you're kind, you show mercy, you extend grace and favor to others. So you have the characteristics of God because you're the sons of God. Well, what if you're the sons of the devil? Well, it's because you have the characteristics of Satan. You carry out his works. You exhibit his character in your life. So you become sons of light. You exhibit the character of light in your life. Well, what does light do? Light illuminates. Light leads. You know, when there's a lighthouse on the shore and the sailors are out in the middle of the ocean and they get closer to land, they're looking for the lighthouse so they can fix their attention on the light. If they go toward the light on the lighthouse, they know that they're safe. It leads them. And so you become sons of light in your belief in Jesus Christ. Jesus said, I am the light of the world. What does that mean? Well, He illuminates our way. He guides us. Just as we would use a light to guide us and illuminate our way as we walk along a physical path. And so Jesus is the light of the world. But He also says in other places in the Scripture that we are to be the light of the world. Of course, we receive our illumination from Him. And when we receive our illumination from Him, then we enlighten others. We enlighten others with the gospel, with the teaching of Christ's Word. And we're also able to lead them because we're lights. Absolutely.
Don't be shy. Don't be ashamed of it.
Absolutely.
Defend it. Don't talk about it.
Right. How are you going to illuminate the way for people? How are you going to lead the people out of darkness if you do not let your light shine? So while you have the light, believe in the light that you may become sons of light. While you have the light, I'm going to be with you just a little while longer. While you have the light, again, in the context, He's spoken about being lifted up, so He's going to be crucified and put to death. He's not always going to be with them in the physical sense. Verse 37. But although He had done so many signs, last portion of verse 36. These things Jesus spoke, departed, and was hidden from them. Was hidden from them. Some see in that word hidden, well, He became invisible and they couldn't see Him. He just disappeared before their eyes. No, that's not really the idea. You see that last and was hidden from them. The and there is not really in the Greek text. Simply, these things Jesus spoke and departed. You might say, disappearing from their sight. That's the idea. He left where He was at and walked away, and because there were so many people in Jerusalem, He just disappeared from their sight. Not that He vanished before their eyes or they couldn't see Him any longer. That's not the idea, I don't believe. Although the word hidden here is the word from which we get our English word cryptic, like something that is hidden, literally. But I think it just has reference to Him disappearing from their sight as He walked away in the crowd after saying these things. Verse 37, but although He had done so many signs before them, they did not believe in Him. Remember the purpose of the writing of John's Gospel, John 20, 30, and 31. Truly Jesus did many other signs in the presence of His disciples, which are not written in this book, but these are written that you may believe that He is the Christ, the Son of the living God. That believing you may have life in His name. So John wrote for the purpose of causing people to believe. He wrote about 7 miracles he records in the gospel, and we've gone through those from time to time and mentioned them. Verse 37, but although He had done so many signs before them, they did not believe in Him. He had just asked them to believe in Him. Remember, that's His whole purpose. Even though John recorded 7 signs or 7 miracles to cause people to believe, I've mentioned on several occasions, everything else in the Gospel of John is directed toward that end as well. He wants them to believe in Him. Believe in Him. That He is the King of Israel? Yes, He wants them to believe that. But He wants them to have the true conception of that idea. Their conception of the King of Israel when they hailed Him as He came into the city of Jerusalem was not that He was the Son of God, that is deity in the flesh. Their conception was that he came as an earthly king. They saw the Messiah to come as an earthly king, not as a spiritual king. That's why they couldn't figure out, well, what is he talking about? He is going to reign forever on David's throne as long-awaited Messiah, but yet he's going to be crucified? Those things don't match up. And so they didn't fully understand and comprehend it. Verse 37, but although he had done so many signs before them, they did not believe in him. There was many who believed in him, but for the most part, the majority did not believe. And many of those who believed in him believed that he was just the Messiah, an earthly king. They didn't have a true concept of who he really was. Verse 38, so they did not believe in him that the word of Isaiah the prophet might be fulfilled. That. Now the word that here in the Greek has reference to result. Sometimes we understand the word to mean in order that or so that, like we did in a previous verse earlier in our context. But here the word carries the idea as a result. So they did not believe in him. And as a result of not believing in him, then the words of Isaiah is actually fulfilled. That the word of Isaiah, the prophet, might be fulfilled, which he spoke. And this is taken from Isaiah 53 in verse 1. Lord, who has believed our report? And to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? Now, when we go back to the book of Isaiah and study this, Isaiah 53 and verse 1, remember this is the chapter regarding the suffering servant. Has reference to the suffering of Jesus Christ for the sins of mankind, his crucifixion on the cross. Well, what's Jesus been speaking about? Well, he's going to be lifted up on the cross. He's going to be crucified for the sins of mankind. So it's only appropriate that this passage be mentioned here, Isaiah 53. But the first verse of Isaiah 53, Lord, who has believed our report? Now in the book of Isaiah, someone is asking that question. Who has believed our report? I want to suggest to you that it's perhaps the prophets are asking that question, or perhaps the believing remnant of God's people during Isaiah's time. Not all the people in Isaiah's time believed God's word. They weren't faithful to it. But there was a believing remnant, always a faithful remnant of God. And so Jesus uses that here, Lord, who has believed our report? And to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed, made known, disclosed? The arm of the Lord? Oftentimes the word arm and hand is used in reference to the power of God. How has the power of God been exhibited in the life of Jesus Christ? Well, in John's Gospel, on 7 occasions, John speaks about miracles, signs and wonders that Jesus had performed to cause people to believe. He had manifested his glory, manifested his majesty in the ability to be able to perform those miracles, showed himself to be deity, showed himself to be the Son of God. So the questions are asked here, again from Isaiah 53 and verse 1, Lord, who has believed our report? Well, not very many at all. And to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? Well, it's been revealed to all in the miracle signs and wonders he's performed, but they haven't believed them, even though they have seen and been aware of the many signs he has performed. Back in verse 37. They don't see it as the power of God. They don't see it as the arm or the hand of God operating in Jesus Christ. All right, we're out of time. Bad place to stop. But nonetheless, we'll have to stop there. Questions or comments? We'll pick up here then, John 12, about verse 37, next Lord's Day morning. Thank you very much for your kind attention.